All right, welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds podcast, episode 3.
3, fantastic. That means we've done 2 in the can.
2 in the can, 1 right now, hot, ready to go. We got some Elvis cooking, the holiday season. Of course, if you don't celebrate the holidays, then you're probably offended. Why are you even listening to this podcast?
Then you're offended by Elvis, then not the holiday.
Yeah, well... Okay, now I'm pressing it again. Stop, Elvis. Stop playing. You're done. Hello. Well,
you brought the whole album.
I brought the whole album. Available on iTunes, Elvis Christmas. It makes a fine treat. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini.
And guess what? First 2 episodes, just Chris and I. Today, we've got a guest.
Nice.
And our guest today is a homeless guy we found underneath the I-10 freeway.
Yes. No,
it's one of our very own film nerd writers at the site, a very funny man who was at our last live show at, of course, the third Tuesday of every month.
He brought quite a crowd with him, too.
He packed the house. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mike Schmidt is here.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I'm wondering when the NASCAR race is going to break out, Graham. What is with this voice?
Hey, holiday, what's going on? Hey, vroom, vroom. Gentlemen, start your engine. Elvis.
Holy God.
Elvis Presley. Mike, you know, I've hosted a couple of game shows on TV.
Once the microphone is on, the host voice comes out.
There's literally a red light on this microphone. It makes me go hosty.
Yeah, and I knew you were a host, and that's why I stayed up 24 hours to do this podcast. So a tribute to Cram. I'm excited.
Oh, Mike, you snooze, you lose. You, of course, have your own podcast, 40-Year-Old Boy, available on iTunes.
Yes, you can get it at iTunes or at MikeSchmidtComedy.com.
Outstanding. Mm-hmm. Well, let's first of all...
One of the top 100 podcasts.
Neighborhood. Yeah, certainly. It's in and out, certainly in the bottom 100 all the time, but...
I'm sure there's a 1 and several zeros next to our podcast.
Yeah. Oh, come on. Well, it's only a matter of time till you catch on. And then you'll realize that you're in the sea of 900 gay guys and a fart machine. Like, that's what podcasts are. There's the 5 funny comics who have them. Yeah. And then there's literally, the penis explosion and gay and more gay. Like, yeah. I think it's actually a podcast.
But really, how can we broaden out to reach all of that audience, though?
Yeah. Yeah. How do we get the gay fart machine demo?
Bringing me in is a first.
And the funny guys. The 5 funny guys.
5 funny guys and a fart machine. Yeah. Graham Elwood, late night, 9 o'clock.
On Fox.
On Fox. So let's get into it. It's the holiday season. Let's talk overall about your favorite holiday film over the history of movies, Mike.
Favorite holiday film of all time. Why? I mean,
wait a minute. Now that's kind of a host voice. Hold on. How am I getting my balls busted? And you're going, favorite
agent.
No.
That was
not a host voice. That was a contestant answering the host voice.
I've got plenty of that.
Yes, for $500 and a chance to advance to the final round, Mike, your favorite holiday movie.
Wow, favorite holiday movie. you know what? I'm an It's a Wonderful Life guy and always have been.
Boo! No, I'm just kidding.
That stinks awful. I like the animated version. Boo!
Why didn't he just die?
I'm a big Alfalfa Schweitzer fan, so that's why I enjoy It's a Wonderful Life. He has such a huge part in that. I can't help but tune in.
That's a coincidence. Graham is like a real big Albert Schweitzer fan.
Really?
Yeah, any of the Schweitzer family I'm on board with.
I watched that this year. I watch it every year. And I've watched it whether I'm with family. I've watched it alone in a youth hostel. And it's always good for a tear or 40 in a minute.
What could be depressing about a youth hostel watching that movie alone?
Oh, just surrounded by smells. Oh, dude. It's not good.
It is a great movie. It really is. Except for the fact that he doesn't get what he wants. Other than that, it's fantastic.
Clarence gets what he wants. That's all that matters, buddy.
That's true.
That's a Clarence-centric film.
Yeah.
That's a Clarence-centric film. Any other holiday movies, Chris? What's your favorite holiday movie?
I like the animation Nightmare Before Christmas. Watch it every year. But this year, Blu-ray.
Ooh.
Hello.
That was the first Blu-ray I bought. When I bought Blu-rays, we bought Dark Knight, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh my God, those are the 2 I actually bought.
Seriously?
Yeah, one because I wanted to show it to Graham.
Okay.
Because the Blu-ray is amazing.
It's retarded,
And then Nightmare Before Christmas, because it's stop motion clay animation. And also Coraline is fantastic.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah,
and the 3D works. That's what's so crazy. You can actually watch 3D in your house now.
That's amazing.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Pretty soon they will be in your house.
Yeah.
Which is fine with me. I thought it saved me the cost of a DVD. Yeah.
Bring over the Coraline game for the holidays.
That's one of those crazy movies, too. Nightmare Before Christmas, no matter how many editions they come out with, they know you're going to buy it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I buy two versions of it. Yeah.
You, my mom, yeah. my wife. I swear to God. You know, my mom's 70. Yeah. And oh, my God, it's the greatest. You know, she got Jack Skellington's all over her house. I mean, she loves it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's insane.
Your mom's not an old cat lady. She's an old Coraline lady. Oh, Night Before Christmas lady.
Did you, what about original Christmas Carol? Are you, because there's like 900 incarnations of A Christmas Carol. There's animated, there's Jim Carrey this year, George C. Scott, which unfortunately is always on TNT.
Definitely the older ones, especially the crazy one with the chains and where Ebenezer Scrooge sits down next to the chair.
Yeah.
That is like one, that's the best one.
I watched it this year from 1938 and some guy named Reginald somebody, but he's the best Scrooge ever because he's just a jag-off to everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he, you realize, I mean, even in watching it, you're like, oh, this guy's a cock. I mean, I hate Scrooge. You know, otherwise
Scrooge is a cock.
Yeah. He gets redeemed and you know, you really want this guy to be redeemed. Right. And also, it's got a quick ending. It's got a the original one, because the original only like it's 75 minutes, so it flies by. And then there's like a burly one of the ghosts is like real burly and like kind of gay, like a Hercules ghost in the original.
Oh yeah, that's
you're gonna be visited tonight.
That has the big cornucopia of fruit.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what they, that's the guy of plenty. The Christmas past.
My favorite. I go Bill Murray and Scrooged.
You know what I mean?
I like it, and I like...
Buster Poindexter.
Buster Poindexter is great in it, and I love...
Carol Kane,
and what's his name?
William Forsythe? John Forsythe, there you go.
Forsythe, playing the old guy, because he comes in, and he's all, like, decaying body, but he's still got, like, the turtleneck and the madman outfit and the cocktail. Yeah. Like, I love that.
It's beautiful.
That's my favorite Hollywood.
Yeah, I always forget it. And then we don't. Christmas Vacation is always at my house too. My wife always. My wife loves Christmas, and I love Christmas because she loves Christmas. But she's, she has to see Wonderful Life and Christmas Vacation, and like this year, she said to me, we watched Christmas Vacation, and she goes, you know what I noticed this year? Randy Quaid is like a big cock in that movie. And I'm like, well, that's
creepy too.
That's the point though.
He's like, really creepy.
That's why they did it. And she's like, I go, there's that scene where, Brian Doyle Murray's wife is on the phone and she says he was bulgy. I go, that's the joke. She's like, I never noticed that. I go, you watch the movie 9 times a year. How do you not notice that?
Well, that movie works on so many different levels. Some of it is more subtle.
Yes.
And I guess I should be happy my wife's not staring at Randy Quaid's junk the entire time. You know what I mean? So I'm happy she didn't notice.
Hey, Quaid, nice crank.
That would be uncomfortably mesmerizing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cousin Eddie's package? Yeah. You're like, oh, dude.
Cousin Eddie's package.
I don't know why they call it a package. Works just fine on its own.
Which is a great podcast, by the way, Cousin Eddie's package.
The one parody one that I love, it's not a movie, but it's a special. Have you ever seen the Black Adder Christmas special?
I have not.
With Rowan Atkinson?
Uh-uh.
Fantastic. It's the story of Scrooge. It's but he starts off as the kindest man in all England, Blackadder, and then as the ghosts visit him, he becomes more and more of an asshole.
That's gorgeous. That's beautiful. How have I not seen it?
Well, all right, let's get into what's in the theaters, because we're just about done with all of the Oscar and holiday movies.
Yep, they snuck up on you, but they're done.
They did. Now, Chris, you wanted to bring up in the Air. We talked about it the last podcast, but why do you want to bring
it up? I want to bring it up because I'm actually hearing a lot of chatter on the internets that a lot of people are think it's terrible, disappointing, overrated. And when I was in the theater watching Sherlock Holmes, two Hollywood hipsters, perhaps, we'll say that, they were talking about how much they hated it, and then how one of their friends represented some big actor, and blah, 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 blah.
Well, they should be kicked.
I love hearing what the hipsters hated.
Yeah.
Never gets old.
No.
Yeah.
This hipster...
And never stops.
No.
That list continues.
Yeah.
What hipsters hate.
Yeah. So I wanted, because you saw it and you loved it, so I wanted to see, now what is it that would be putting dumb people off about it?
Well, honestly, hipsters for starters, everyone's entitled to opinions and they're entitled to get kicked in the teeth. I might be too biased because I travel so much that on that level alone, the movie I thought was great. Like literally when he goes back to his apartment and in the corner of the frame is a Hilton mouthwash complimentary mouthwash bottle, which I always take when I'm staying at home. That kind of stuff alone really resonated with me. And the fact that I travel for a living and that whole lifestyle really, really resonated with me. Why people are having a backlash is because people always do that thing. When a movie comes out and says everyone, oh, it's so great. If you didn't see it the opening weekend and you've heard it for several weeks now about how great it is, and then you see it, you're like, it's not that great. You know, I mean, it's like I knew what happened in Sixth Sense. No, you saw it a month after it had been out when everyone talked about it, so you were looking for that. Yeah. You didn't figure it out.
Right.
So I think there's some of that, and I don't know. I think it's just classic. It's great George Clooney. Like, I don't understand why there would be any backlash.
But I think that's your problem, is I think there's a lot of people who want to not like him. I think there's a lot of people, and I will say, especially not in, you know, in the Midwest, mm-hmm. and, you know, your bedrock communities, and people have been forced fed. I hate to get into this, but, you know, he's the liberal guy, he's the political guy, and he's someone that normal people just look at and like, oh, he's a big movie star, and we've been force fed this movie star. Why do we have to listen to what he has to say about Darfur? And so I think there's a real backlash against him for that. As far as the hipsters, I don't know. It has enough ironic detachment for the entire community of hipsters. I don't know. That's why, how they can hate it.
That's why it threw me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get the hipster thing, in fact.
And by the way, I think if anyone's deserved stardom, it's George Clooney.
Yes.
I mean, he's been around for... He was in Return of the Killer Tomatoes. I mean, he's been around for
years. And wasn't
years,
even the
years,
best
years.
Thing in it.
No, no. He was supporting.
He wasn't even starring
in Return of the Killer Tomatoes.
The movie with Mrs. Garrett and the gang.
The Facts of Life.
Facts
movie.
Of Life.
He's in Roseanne with, you know, and yes. Co-starring with his hair. You know, he's in From Dusk Till Dawn. I mean, it's like that.
And if the guy wants to
live,
he's great. And if he wants to, you know, and the thing I'll say about if there is people like, oh, Darfur, whatever.
Are there people saying that right now?
Darfur.
That's another podcast.
Darfur.
Yeah, whatever.
No, but like Mike was saying, if there are people who are sick of his, like, oh, I'm a Hollywood, you know, liberal, I got all these causes or whatever. If there are people saying that, and I haven't heard anybody say that, I've only heard the hipster backlash. If there are people saying that, I will give the guy credit. Him and Brad Pitt both went, look, cameras are following us everywhere. So why don't we have the cameras go somewhere where there's a value, where people can learn, you know, learn about a situation that's going. So I actually give him credit for that.
Yeah.
Could you label him, oh, he's one of these out of touch celebrities? Yeah. And you know what? Most of America is out of touch. You know what I mean? Most of America hasn't been to a war zone or a third world country, and they have no clue what's
going
on.
You're getting into a real gray area, completely different show. I mean, you want to talk about how everybody's out of touch. Well, they are, because there's, you know, like we know people in the Midwest who think that everybody's crazy. Like everybody outside of where they live are insane. And people on the coasts believe that where we're from is flyover country, and those people don't matter. I mean, it's fucking...
Yeah, everyone lives in a little bubble.
That's the problem. It's become this insulated, everybody's against everybody type of country. And, you know, the internet doesn't help. And that's where I'm seeing a lot of the backlash, the Fox News, the We Hate Clooney. And
it's all the internet.
Yeah.
Stuff.
If you go to Nikki Fink's site, I mean, it's like literally there'll be 400 comments about how Up in the Air is awful because people, he thinks we're stupid in flyover country. No, he doesn't. He's an actor who fucking
does
movies.
Care.
Yeah, and his character lives in Omaha,
but
in Up in the Air.
But they've been,
he wants his movies to make money. End of story.
Yeah,
that's
but,
it.
And that's the thing is they'll say he never makes money. Obviously, we've rejected him as a movie star. He never makes any money unless he's in a crazy ensemble picture. So why do they keep forcing him down our throat? I mean, I hear that attitude all the time.
Oh, really?
Yes, dude. Oh. Go to the internet.
The internet, though, that's like four people with a giant supercomputer.
That's exactly
like,
what that is, though. When people say, oh,
website.
It's all over the internet, it literally could be
well, of course
400
it is.
People.
Oh, I'm not really giving it credence.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you what I've read. I mean, you know, and these are people
being
forced
by stuff. No, I'm
telling
you, stop posting those things.
I'm telling you, if you want some of me, there is nothing between us but air and opportunity.
Yeah. Look, Mike spends the better part of 14 hours a day reading the internet.
Yeah.
He knows what's on there.
I got nothing going on.
Yeah.
When I'm not checking the top 100 podcasts, I'm busy seeing what people think on Nikki Fink's.
Yeah.
All right. Wow.
Next movie.
I like it.
Avatar. The big movie of the year and apparently of the last 15 years. Reported budget of $200 million, clearly higher. I mean, if you're actually spending money on, I don't know, inventing cameras, the chances are the cost, the R&D cost alone is fairly significant.
Well, you know that because you invented this microphone for this podcast.
Exactly.
The blue snowball.
And it only took 15 years. So James Cameron and I started at the exact same time.
Wow.
He started a 3D camera. I invented a microphone.
You had microphones.
Yeah, yeah, we're in a garage in the valley.
With
no, undisclosed location. Yeah. Now, I saw this movie, and I have to say, visually, absolutely stunning. If you're not going to see it in 3D, just don't bother. I mean, really, just see it in 3D or don't bother. But, and this was bothering me for a very long time, and I finally figured it out. I was like, you know, story-wise, there's something derivative about it. There's pieces from everything. But then I realized, no, it's not. It's one very specific story. And what it is, if you take away all the 3D effects, is... it's Pocahontas in space.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, that's really, totally it. I'm telling
what it
you.
Is.
And honestly, like, it's three-dimensional, but except for the lead guy and maybe the alien girl, all the other characters are two-dimensional. I mean, like,
oh, yeah, it's
like
really
this, the army colonel is the most they're like, I'm gonna kill all the blue monkeys or whatever. He's like, he honestly is the most two-dimensional villain.
Right. And then the greedy developer, Giovanni Ribisi, tried. He tried to put a little dimension as like, no, we just need the money. We need to, you know, we need to plow here and get the monetarium or whatever
there's the dilithium crystals. Yeah, let's just call it what it is.
Yeah. And it's, you know, okay, then he, you know, the John Smith's guy, character goes in and, you know, it falls in love with the chief's daughter. And it's Pocahontas in space.
The one thing I thought was interesting was having a Marine that didn't have his legs. And this is the future.
Great start.
That's great. That's a great start.
And I was really blown away by the start. And I was like, okay, cool. Maybe there's going to be some nuances to the characters, something a little different to match how amazing it looks. Yeah. How about if, you know, there was 15 years maybe spent, a couple of those years could have been spent on the script, but they weren't. They were busy, you know,
spend a month on the script.
Yeah.
How about that?
And here's how you could tell, because there's lines in that script that we need a moratorium on from movies from now on. There's lines in that movie I never want to hear again. And you could tell they were from 15 years ago. Here they are. Oh, yeah, that's right. Who's bad?
Yeah,
let's take that out from now on for movies.
Yes.
Let's remove that.
Oh my god, that's an.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
No.
And well, I'm seeing it Friday, so I.
Yeah,
don't
well, I, we don't
see it in 3D.
Yeah.
And,
oh, I will. Sure.
And that's the climax of the movie. Is it? No, that's not. I'm gonna say who's bad. And the other one, you are not in Kansas anymore.
Oh
my god!
On.
Please, just, you know, a little rewrite. That's all you need to do. Just
wait.
Just
does
take
a Marine
that
bark that out at the other Marine?
Oh, it was the colonel.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
The colonel. Yeah, it was the beginning. You
terrible.
Are not in Kansas anymore. Yeah, and it was
it's the year 2152. What are
that's
you talking
reference.
About?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
reference do you mean, Colonel?
Yeah, exactly. We haven't seen that movie. We just watch holograms on our iPod.
What movie are you? It's like the one thing in Empire Strikes Back. And I remember watching this with a friend, and when Han Solo goes out on the Tauntaun to look for Luke, and they're like, but, you know, the doors are closing, everything's getting closed. He goes, then I'll see you in hell. And my buddy sitting next to me goes, what's that?
Yeah.
Christian concept invented on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
Like, I just love that. Like, you're in Kansas anymore.
That's terrible.
You mean Kansas that's now a part of the Canadian, Mexican, you know, like whatever the whatever
exactly.
evolves 150
yeah,
years
well,
from now.
Yeah, well, we don't have states anymore. What are you talking
state
about?
What?
And that was...
He should have, you know what, if Cameron's writing that script, he should be self-referential enough to where he should, like, refer to aliens.
Yes.
Like, in 2150, he should be like, hey, that's my... My movie's a classic that lasted that long. Instead of, like, instead of Wizard of Oz... You know, have some like game over, man, game over. Like have someone say that, and you're like, oh, that's his movie's a timeless
that's
classic.
Some,
even that, you
some
know?
Jokes about Terminators not working out.
Yes.
You know, maybe building robots or whatever. And the thing about James Cameron is like he's really Michael Bay with a conscience. When you look at him, there's movies. I mean, you kind of root for him. He makes these big spectacles, but you know, if you go back and see Terminator 2 and even Aliens 2, I mean, there were nuances to those characters. There was nuances to that story. And they made those movies classics, especially for sequels. And it's just like, well, come on. You know, stop spending so much time on the camera. And because it was close. You really...
yeah,
it was
you,
one of those
movies
you wanted to love this movie from beginning to end. And you love the visuals, but you're like, you know...
And
A little bit more time on the script and the characters would have been.
Had better. I been 11 or 12, this isn't an insult. I would have thought it was the most. I would have come out of the theater, you know, oh, it was awesome.
I was just going to ask, is this a problem that.
If you haven't 40 seen
40 year old guys, are these movies not for us anymore?
I'm 34.
Yeah, I apologize.
Hollywood 34. Yes, we're all. Yeah. No one doing podcasting is over 34.
No, we're 34.
No, that's right. I have an older brother who's now younger than me.
Yeah.
So, but seriously, is this a case of these movies aren't for us anymore?
No, and the reason is because there's stuff that's still amazing. Okay. And like Dark Knight is a good example. It's still just a Batman movie.
It was a PG-13 movie.
It was a PG-13 Batman, and it was absolutely amazing.
Yes.
And when we get to it too, you know what? Sherlock Holmes. Good movie, enjoyable by us older viewers.
Right. Well, that's what I'm wondering. Are we all supposed to be buying tickets to Jeff Bridges as a country singer? That's what I mean. I mean, is that have we outgrown the blockbuster?
I think
it does.
The studios would say yes, and they don't care if we go see it or not.
That's what I'm wondering.
They just want the tickets. Well, I think what it is. But keep in mind, these filmmakers are older too. They've been making. They know better. They know better. And no one tells James Cameron what to do.
Yeah.
So it was really his choice to dumb down his movie.
And also, I think too, and this is such a prevailing problem in Hollywood, is everyone is so drunk on the technology. That story takes such a backseat. I mean, obviously the most egregious form of heresy is Michael Bay and the Transformer movies.
Oh my God, yeah.
But I mean, like, that's what everyone's doing. It's just like technology is on the forefront. That's just like, clearly they went, Pocahontas in space. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they had, that one line, oh God, the floating forest of Pandora, ever heard of it? No, I haven't. I'm a Marine who can't walk, who just flew to this outpost.
No, yeah. I've been watching The Wizard of Oz for 150 years. I have no idea what that means. Yeah. But that's my point. Is like you're are these for us? Are these not, you know, like, because I've outgrown the entire horror genre. Like, I wish I hadn't, and I'm hoping eventually another horror movie comes along like Scream did and changes everything.
Well, what about Paranormal Activity?
Well, I saw it, and I think it's something you had to see with a crowd. But again, if you watched it in your house, it's like I watched Blair Witch with a crowd and loved it, and then I saw it at my house and still liked it, but I could see through it. You know what I mean?
That is and that's true. Paranormal Activity was a movie you see in the theater with a bunch of scared people.
Yes,
and
that's a fun way to see a horror.
It was awesome.
Movie.
Really, you could say that about most horror movies, actually.
Sure, but then I've seen. You know, I would. This is the first Saw I didn't see in a theater. I didn't see the Halloween, the Rob Zombie's second Halloween, because I don't.
Well, when you say horror genre, I mean, that's, no one expects those movies to be good, but I did like, I liked Sam Raimi's movie though. The Drag Me to Hell.
Ooh, right. Hated it.
Did you really?
Hated it.
Wow, yes, I thought that one was
cartoony, nice. Weird, bad.
That's what I liked about it.
The first 15 minutes with the old lady in the parking garage, awesome. And then from that point on, down fucking hill. That woman...
It was Evil Dead 2 is really what it was.
True, absolutely. But not nearly as good or campy or fun. That actress chick... And come on, the second the Mac guy is a professor, I'm out. I'm finished. Literally, you can hear me washing my hands in the back of the theater in a fountain. Awful.
In a fountain.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fountains in Cineplexus.
All right. Let's move on to Sherlock Holmes.
I did not see this.
I saw Sherlock Holmes, and I have to say I was really against it. I mean, when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, great, a womanizing, drunk, you know, slovenly Sherlock Holmes. And here's the thing. The movie is actually pretty good, and it has nothing to do with the trailer. So here's a good example of where a filmmaker, Guy Ritchie, got it right, where the marketing and trailer departments got it 100% right. Wrong.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean,
never happens.
Yeah. The trailer you see is not the movie you see. Thank God. And actually made me enjoy it. They made Holmes very, very smart. And that's what he is. You know, he's probably everything goes in his mind. They made him eccentric. Fine. But, you know, you watch the trailer like, oh, he's sleeping with women all the time. But he's James Bond, you know, and he doesn't sleep with any women. And he's constantly solving problems. And he shows that he's smarter than everyone around him. Great villains. Great cast, and the only, you know, Robert Downey Jr., he was pretty good in it, but I think we could have found a British actor that could have, you know, maybe pulled it off, like Jude Law did a good job, but you know, he's Iron Man right now. Give some cool, you know, English actor a chance, you know. So I would have liked to have seen actually an English actor do it, but the movie was good, it was fun. Guy Ritchie, to me, it's always been kind of a one-trick pony. And this movie actually shows that he has like a little bit more of range.
Yeah. That was the thing about the trailer to me. I was like,
and you gotta subtract Madonna's movie, by the way.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. But for me, his one trick is more than enough. I'll go see Rock and Rolla and Snatch yeah. and Lockstock every day.
And I was afraid that Sherlock Holmes would be too much like those movies and not be like Sherlock Holmes, but it wasn't. It was Sherlock Holmes with some of those elements in it, which made it, which yeah, and it made it really cool. It was a fun. It was the definition of like a popcorn movie because it was like, it was fun, it was smart, it was silly, it was funny, and it was
and there was popcorn available.
And there was popcorn available. And it was, you know, you see it in a packed theater. It was fun. It was unexpectedly watchable.
Good. I'm excited for it. Yeah, I have a friend who kind of already put the stink eye on it, but
I had the biggest stink eye ever when Neil said, "Oh, I can't wait to see this movie." I'm like, "You're crazy. This movie is going to be ruined and it's going to be ridiculous." And it was actually pretty good.
Good. Looking forward to it.
Nice work. Well, I saw Invictus. Am I the only one who saw it at this table?
Yes. I actually had to get an ointment to clear it up. Come on, Snowball.
MikeSchmidtComedy.com. There's parts of Invictus I liked. Morgan Freeman is an amazing Nelson Mandela. Mm-hmm. Matt Damon was believable as a South African rugby guy. Like, his accent wasn't like...
Would it have been as believable if Ben Affleck was in that role?
Oh. Hello, mate. I'm going to go play some rugby down in Johannesburg. What? That's not even the right continent for that accent.
I like that. I think Guy Ritchie should have directed Invictus. The rugby team is a caper. There's no fucking diamond in. Mandela's on the, he's playing both sides of the fence. I like this
movie. I would have seen that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some okay moments to it. There's some after school special moments to it.
Would you say it was a feel good movie?
Yeah, it's definitely a feel good movie.
But did it make you feel good specifically?
Yeah. You know, and it shed some light on the situation in South Africa at that time.
I'm out. No interest.
Boom. No learning. No
don't
learning.
Care.
Stop.
Don't want to know
no.
about me.
Not happening within my range of vision. Yeah. Could not be less interesting.
If it's history, it doesn't affect me.
Don't forget, Mike hosts the Darfur and South Africa podcast.
Whatever.
So it was decent, and you know, we talked about it on the last episode when we were talking about the trailer. You know, Clint Eastwood, I'll go see any movie he does, and even if he doesn't, if he misses the mark, I'm still all right with it.
I'm an Eastwood guy, but when you sit in an Invictus, when you go, I mean, it's a conscious decision to buy that ticket. In your mind, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
But are you in that theater going, well, this is going to tug at the heartstrings and be 2 hours of? I find it weird to invest in that kind of thing. I don't know. It had screamed important. The entire baseball playoffs, they were hammering you with commercials for it.
Well, it had a surprise ending, didn't it?
it's
a true story, weirdo.
Oh, the internet lies again.
Damn it.
Yeah, I just that to me, you know, you're investing in it.
Yeah, you
in
are.
Invictus.
If you, I like period piece movies. I mean, I like true story things, and Morgan Freeman and Clint Eastwood, just
sure
I'm gonna go see them, and you know, it's a C+ B-, I think, if we're gonna give it some kind of wacky grade, but
let's do that.
Yeah, let's do
so it's all right, you know. I'm sure some people are gonna come out of that movie not liking it, and some will. It's all right. It's okay.
Did you ever see a movie like that and think that you wish you had the crowd from enough? Like, I wish the entire crowd I saw Paranormal Activity would have gone with me to see Invictus. Like, just to see all these 18-year-old kids would have sat there and just like, oh, this audible sigh every time something happened. Yeah. Oh,
and
what?
Then you take away their phones, so
yeah,
they can't text,
stop texting
for like
sure.
2 hours.
Pay attention.
Their heads would explode.
They would.
They're waiting for the demon to show up and kill Mandela.
Speaking of demons and Mandela, what was Princess and the Frog like, Chris? Oh, baby. That's a host for you, Doctor.
That's nice. Nicely done.
Whip you guys out to commercial. You won't even know what happened.
Way to move it along. Nice. I did see Princess and the Frog, and you know what? It wasn't bad. It was okay. It was a good kids movie. My daughter's 4, enjoyed it as well. The thing I liked about it is and ironically, the characters had more dimensions than the ones in Avatar. Because the characters, and they were frogs. because the characters actually, like the hero, they had flaws. Like there was stuff wrong with them, so you could kind of see a little bit of nuances. Like they were actually people. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, the good girl always does everything right. No, she's kind of tunnel visioned and is missing the point a lot of the times. And oh, the playboy, he's the guy that always likes to party and sleep with women. Okay, well, maybe they didn't say sleep with women, but...
Disney animated stories about the guy banging a lot of bones. It was
definitely is Roy dead? Yeah. Throw this in the script.
Yeah, it was definitely implied. They were really good. Then they've got the crazy stock Disney characters that could have done without, like the inbred Firefly. That was a little disconcerting.
What?
It was like the inbred Firefly who was like in the swamp, didn't have enough teeth, and then he fell in love with the moon. Oh. That's how he talked. So, and because people were afraid, like, oh, it's the first African-American, princess and stuff. And that wasn't the problem. The problem was the racism and the inbred secondary. Yeah, the hillbilly characters. But
he flew in from Song from the South.
Yeah. And that's pretty much what those characters are like. What? You spent this much time to worry about the race and then you do this? Crazy.
How does this movie stack up to, like, your Tarzans and your Little Mermaids? Like, before... Pixar changed everything.
Absolutely. There's three like kind of golden age animated Disney movies, and that's really Lion King, Aladdin and Little Mermaid. Those are like classics. And then you've got Tarzan's, and they're okay, but they don't capture that. This one's in between. It's not as good as Little Mermaid, but it's like way better than like say Fox and the Hound or any of those. So it's really and the thing I liked about it too is the villain was really cool. It was like this voodoo guy and this priest guy. But he called himself Shadow Man, and there's actually a comic book character, Shadow Man. So we'll see if there's... I don't think the Disney lawyers are losing any sleep over it.
No,
but
doubtful.
But the thing I really liked about it is that the guy that, like, used, like, the dark spirits, to get all his powers and do that. And they didn't, like, cutesy up any of that. It was, like, that stuff was really dark and really, like, scarily animated. So they didn't shy away from it, which was really cool. And but it was a good, it was a good story. They kind of twisted it a little bit. It had a little more creativity to the structure too than Avatar. It didn't right. Stick to the linear kind of Pocahontas story because they already did Pocahontas. They didn't have to do that again in space.
In space.
So good movie for the kids. For adults, pretty decent. It's definitely watchable. So if you have kids, see it. If you don't have kids, you might still like it.
And if you're a dad who's a new parent, you might want to pick up the book Pacify Me by a handbook for the freaked out new dad. Written by Chris Mancina.
And I will sign it personalized for you right on comedyfilmnerds.com. And before the end of the year, 10% off.
Oh, coupon get out code, there and improv. Hello. Buy something.
Yeah.
Will this podcast go up before the end of the year?
What day is it?
It'll go up.
Oh, okay, good. Yes. Yeah. I don't know how that works. I don't know how
we're going to get it up by tonight, but if you're listening to it right now, tonight could mean anything.
Yeah. Enjoy it. You're listening to it tonight.
Yeah. That's because we're from the future.
Brothers. I saw Brothers. Am I the only one who saw Brothers?
You are. I don't know what Brothers is.
I didn't see Brothers.
That is the post-traumatic stress movie with Tobey Maguire and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay.
That's all right. It's
the remake, right?
It is a remake of a Dutch film, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Which is bizarre.
Same screenwriter, remade her own movie,
which is really bizarre. Like I knew that going in and was curious. Like I really want to see this original Dutch one.
Do you see this kind of movie? This is a film where it's a guy who goes to Iraq and then he comes back and thinks his wife is banging his brother or friend.
Brother.
Okay. Do you see this movie in a research capacity because you spend so much time over in Iraq and things like that? Is it? I guess because, you've been there and you've certainly not lived war, but you've been in that situation. Mm-hmm. When you see a film like this, does it affect you differently? Or is it something you see because you think you understand better? Or is it just purely entertainment for you?
Something about how you feel about Tobey Maguire?
He's delightful.
Yeah.
I think
back to the commercial.
He actually... Tobey Maguire in this movie was he was a POW in Afghanistan.
Okay.
So to me, I mean, obviously I'm going to go in, I'm not in the military, but I am far more knowledgeable about it than I was. So I'm looking at it from that aspect. And so I'm really trying to see, is this realistic? And I'd be curious to talk to anybody who's been over there or any vets or anything like that to see what they had to say about it. Cause there were some parts in there where I was like, Are they bad mouthing like soldiers, and are they trying to make this an anti-war movie somehow? Like, and that always kind of that bothers me a little bit. I'm certainly not pro-war, but
could you tell, or was it like thinly veiled, or they just didn't know what they wanted to do?
Well, if you weren't sure, though, I guess it was obviously kind of stealth.
I think it was a little stealth, and I mean, Tobey Maguire and Jake Gyllenhaal, they're great actors. They do a good job, and. Sam Shepard plays the dad who was a Marine and an alcoholic, and I think that family dynamic is there's some interesting parts of that. But like, and when Tobey Maguire comes home and he's flipping out, like there is some, you know, something that from what I've just guys I've talked to and the what I've heard and read about post-traumatic stress, it seemed like they tried to do a fair amount of research and try to be accurate about it. But then there was just some parts of it that I just was like, it just feels like.
A false note?
Yeah, false note. Hollywood's getting in the way somewhere. You know what I mean? Like they didn't do enough research or get enough people who'd actually been there and been through this involved in the picture. Like they were talking right. about it from a distance or looking through a window as opposed to getting people that council vets and sure. vets that have been over there and stuff like that. It just didn't feel like it had enough accuracy in it.
And also, though, I'm sure they detach themselves at some point and they go, you know what, we're making a movie here. We're not making a treatise on post-traumatic sure. stress disorder.
Yeah.
So we also have to somehow involve the brother and the dynamic yeah. and the all that stuff. So it's just such a touchy subject to as a side note to a film, it seems to me. It seems like such a huge problem and something that so many people are dealing with now that to have a movie about it and then still try to balance a movie story along with that.
It's like a small indie film, too.
It's a small indie film, yeah. and so, you know, hats off to them, and maybe they just didn't have the money to do all this stuff or whatever. And Mike, you know, you bring up a good point. They are just trying to make an interesting story about relationships. And I think, but like you say, I think if you're going to make the backdrop of this brothers and a wife dynamic, the backdrop is Afghanistan yeah. and POWs and post-traumatic stress,
yeah.
then you better have your shit together.
Yeah, and also, eventually, you know, you're making Babel twice. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right. Like, yeah, exactly.
It's an incredibly long thing, because you open up so many different things that you have to examine,
yeah.
when in reality, you're trying to look at the relationship between these three people, mm-hmm. and to bring everything else in and around it is it's got to be a difficult line to walk.
I think, you know, if you're good, to me, like, if you're going to make a movie about the relationship between brothers and a wife or something like that, then take it somewhere else.
Yeah.
You either need to make a movie and say, we are making a post-traumatic stress movie,
yeah.
and we're going to research it and make that film the best that we can, or let's just make a movie about...
So really it was just about relationships with a background of POWs in Afghanistan.
A little bit, and they were, but that was the thing. That's why I'm so like, on the fence, is because they were trying to do a little bit of both.
So it wasn't like Hurt Locker, which was very specific.
Hurt Locker, I think, is the best movie about that war to come out so far, in my mm-hmm. opinion.
So good, go. Dude.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. Hurt Locker is amazing, and I hope it wins as many awards as it possibly
yeah,
can.
It's great.
And honestly, that scene in Hurt Locker, and I've talked about this before, at the end of the movie where he's in the grocery store and his wife goes, pick us out some cereal, and he's standing in front of 500 kinds of cereal, and he's just like... And the very next scene is he's back in the war zone. That explains what being over there is like and how these guys become sort of adrenaline junkies and just want to go back there. And they have not, once they come back to life in America, which is Disneyland, they just can't.
They got
to
pick cereal.
They got to pick cereal, and it doesn't matter.
And it's not going to explode.
It's not going to. Yeah, exactly. Well, because defusing a bomb and going on missions.
It's not like it's Pop Rocks.
Is life yeah. is life and death. And when you come back here, going and picking on cereal isn't.
Sure.
And that's.
But unfortunately, everybody in the world over here thinks it is.
Yeah, thinks
yeah.
it is.
Everybody in the world, all these people. These are the people on the internet telling me that Avatar is anti-military. These are the people who are like typing all this bullshit because they all have nothing to do but navel gaze the entire fucking time.
Yeah, I know.
Whereas there is real stuff going on. And again, who am I to talk about it? Because I'm a fucking nobody. But
and,
still.
Well, and while they're typing, they're eating cereal.
Well, way to bring it around. No, but my point is that scene captured more in Hurt
sure.
Locker than all of Brothers.
Right.
And again, I'm not saying Brothers sucked. I'm not saying that. There's some good moments to the film, but it just missed the mark. Like sort of like in the Valley of Allah was trying to deal with post-traumatic stress, but they were trying to ride the...
We should assign somebody to see the original.
Yeah, yeah, we should do that. Go do it.
Okay, I'm gonna go right now.
Anyway, so
Bring me my internet.
That's my take on it. I don't think I think people are going one foot into that subject matter, and you have to go all in. And if you are, then
sure.
it's gonna be tricky.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion on that. And then I snuck into It's complicated, and have you heard about the Morgans?
No.
And that I have post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, no kidding.
Why don't you just sum up those two movies together?
Well, it's complicated. You know what? Really, it's not.
Yeah.
Hooking up with an ex, not that complicated. I think all of us here are adult children of divorced parents. I would not... The kid's like, oh my God, mommy and daddy... It still fucking gives a shit. If my parents hooked up, I'd be like, really? I thought you guys hated each other. Yeah. All right, well, you know, go with God. I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, these adult kids are crying, and they're all in a bed together, and I'm laughing out loud. My wife's like, what are you laughing? I'm like, these are kids in their 20s crying because mommy and daddy are being confusing.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Would this movie have had more impact, I don't know, say 50 years ago?
You know what? It has an impact on my mom and her friends. They're going to love this movie.
Okay,
and
there
mom,
you go.
And mom, if you're listening, if you miraculously somehow have figured out how to use a computer and go to iTunes, enjoy It's Complicated. You'll love it. I'm your son. Happy holidays. I love you.
Yeah.
But, you know, because I was in a packed theater and any woman over 50 was howling. It's Nancy Myers. That's their group. God bless you.
And you know what? That generation thinks that their divorces still matter.
Well, you know, you
they won't shut up about
it. Yeah, they think their divorces bother their grown children. Yeah. They're worried about it. It's like, dude, no, we don't fucking care.
It's done.
You brought up this up at the beginning of the show. Is that do they expect us to go see that movie? No.
No.
They don't expect us to go see those movies at all.
Yeah, they expect
our parents to go.
Yeah. But
you on a cougar hunt? What are you doing at that movie?
I'm going cougar hunting.
Hey, how you doing?
I was on a cougar hunt. Yes, I was. Go to my website, cougarhunt.com.
Yeah. That might be a place.
That's got to be a website.
Yeah, that might be a fucking place.
I didn't know Grandma would own this. You must be a millionaire.
It's a great revenue stream. Yeah. And then I saw, have you heard about the Morgans? And have you heard about the Morgans is like... It makes it complicated. It's complicated. I'll say this. I can watch Alec Baldwin make pudding, and it'll be interesting and funny. There's some very funny moments in It's Complicated. Have you heard about the Morgans? It's like he's trying to get back together with this Sarah Jessica Parker, who's this ball-busting New Yorker.
Yeah.
And she's like, and he cheats on her, right? She's like, how could you cheat on me? And I wanted to stand up in the theater and go, because you're fucking annoying.
Yeah.
Why didn't he do it sooner?
Yeah.
Why didn't he marry the mistress? Like, yeah. What is he? She's, oh my God. And the jokes in it. Apparently, if you lived in New York, you're retarded if you step off that island. If you go out in the wilderness, you've never seen trees or water.
Oh, you mean upstate?
Yeah, upstate. And just the New York joke after another was like, I get it.
Well, maybe they're like, hey, let's make Sex in the City into a movie, but not call it that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was.
No, I don't think it was even that mercenary. I think they were like, who does America hate? Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Now, who could he marry in this movie that would make it doubly unpleasant? Sarah Jessica Parker. Oh, dude, what a mess.
And anyone who's like thinks
people still like Hugh Grant? That's what I don't get. I mean,
you know, when he plays a dick, I love him. When he's this guy, he's like, oh, I'm sorry.
When he plays Dudley Moore, you don't like him as much.
I want to punch him in the throat.
That's what he is.
Is that a piano?
Yeah.
But the whole thing looks like, I mean, some 80s time capsule, like Doc Hollywood. You know what I mean?
This movie's been made 100 times.
Like you said, the city boy winds up in the country, and oh my God, a pig got loose.
Was it Pocahontas in New York?
That I would have liked.
Yeah.
That movie needed a little post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah. Oh, sweet Jesus. I wish someone would have been shot in a cave.
How many people are in that audience?
A lot. Everyone who couldn't get tickets. It was this past weekend. It was Christmas weekend. Anyone who couldn't get
the settlers.
Tickets. Yeah.
I would pay to see him waterboarded.
Yeah.
I think.
Just to have him go, oh, sorry, I don't.
Shut up.
Take that, Limey.
Yeah. They put, you know, attach a battery cable to his NAS. Yeah. You know what I mean? There you go.
He gave those up long ago. He handed them to Jay Leno.
Oh, God. Man up. So don't go see those movies. All right, so we're coming close to running out of time, so let's talk about out on DVD this week, District 9, best sci-fi movie in a long time.
Loved
yes.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts, Michael Schmidt.
Huge fan. I say you combine it with Invictus and make the perfect South African film. I loved District 9, man. I thought the scene...
It was a great movie.
The scene where when they're trying to learn the if he can use the weapons... I almost cried. I mean, I was because
it was chilling.
Yes, yeah. Because it's real. Because that, like you mentioned, waterboarding. You mentioned torture, and you mentioned things that are going on. The parallels between them just taking him and him saying, you see him going through, get me out of here, get me out of here. To, yeah. Sir, please listen to me, sir. Like, he's completely dehumanized. He's an instrument of destruction at that point. They're just trying to get him to squeeze fucking triggers.
Yeah,
and I'm probably jumping ahead if you haven't seen the film, but you have to see it because it's really unbelievable.
The scene where they're running through and he's with the alien and there's like, and the alien stops and is like, you guys were doing experiments on my people? Like, that was like...
Yeah, and then he didn't know what to say. I don't think he realized how horrible that was until the alien actually kind of pointed it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until he needed the alien's help, the aliens were prawns. They weren't anything to him.
Yeah.
But, and the same thing with the alien. They were his oppressors, but he didn't realize they were his persecutors as well up until that point. Just amazing.
The thing I loved about that movie is it's like, well, it was a smart sci-fi movie, but it was one of the few smart sci-fi movies that was also metaphorical that... also had great action sequences and stuff blowing up.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, oh, was my God, this is everything.
$10 million.
Yes.
It was could have made 20 avatars. I don't think it was 10 avatars. Million. It was like 10 or 15
I think
or something.
I think it was 40.
It was $85. Yeah.
But no, I mean, a $40 million movie for that, a movie of that scale is unheard of. It's unbelievable.
Of.
You know, what was it? You know, Michael Bay's abomination was like two to 300, something like that.
But when you see films like that, District 9, when
sci-fi, it puts your faith back in, science fiction is a smart, viable genre.
Right. And also, it can be sold with a log line. What if aliens came and couldn't leave? And you know what I mean? It's like with Hancock. What I wrote it in my review. What if Superman was a dick?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're and then you go from there. And District 9, just the idea that the ship came and stopped, and then we had to actually go get them out of the ship. You know what I mean? And just the budget alone is worth the shot of South Africa with the ship over it forever. And then they tell you it's been there for 20 years.
Yeah,
so there's generations that have lived with that ship above them and never knew any different. And it brings you to that place. It was so great.
And
the thing
that's so awesome is it does this thing that sci-fi... has good sci-fi has always done, which is social commentary. It's like the original Planet of the Apes that Rod Serling wrote.
Yeah.
That was this amazing social commentary.
You know, it's a cliche, but it's true. I mean, the best sci-fi is about people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and the whole thing, the alien showed up and then all the like, the dancing and the lovey-dovey wore off. And it's like, get these bugs out of here.
Yeah.
Like,
fuck.
Yeah, that was great. Just showing.
You know, this shanty town's too good for them.
Yeah.
Let's move them to a different shanty town.
Yeah, we need to move them to lean-tos.
Yeah, that's how much they hate them. They're actually considering that they're going to move them. The magnitude of that project, when you really watch it, and they're like, we got to move all of these million bugs to the outskirts of town. And we're just going to go in and, I mean, just, it becomes this, you're going, that's not going to happen ever. This is never going to work. And then the whole weapons dealers who lived among the bugs. And dude.
Just
fantastic.
How they were exploited. And the fact that it took place in South Africa. That was just, it's such a great movie. I can't wait to see whatever the special features are on the DVD.
Sure.
I think it's going to be great.
How do you feel about the sequel?
There's a sequel.
It's being worked on right now.
I would think they're going to call it District 10.
I don't know. All I know is I don't know if they've signed Coley to it yet, but it probably picks up where the last one left off. I mean, obviously, once it made
we better
figure out what to do. Yeah.
But
I'll see it, but I'm hesitant.
If the same team find it.
I hope the original short film is on the DVD. That's actually really good that it's based on.
Did you see this short film that just got the guy I hate to be vague, but there was a YouTube film where and it basically shopped around Hollywood. It's a 3-minute thing of robots attacking Rome.
And
then
he
wound up getting this ridiculous like $60 million
Was that
film.
The Sam Raimi deal? Ghost House?
Yeah, exactly. It's that guy, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see this short?
Yeah.
I didn't see the short.
Jesus Christ.
Argentina or something like that?
Yeah. These robots just attack Buenos Aires or something. And you're like, what the... I mean, this is a YouTube clip that's 3.5 minutes long. It looks like it's with $100 million.
Yeah, spent like $5,000 or something
Jesus God, it's amazing
to
watch.
That's what the technology is up to now.
Yeah.
Thanks to James Cameron.
Right.
Thank you, Jimmy.
We talk in a garage.
Yeah. The fact that we can talk in a garage.
Yeah, true. And that's people in Pakistan will hear it. It never ceases to amaze me, dude. I get letters from Ireland. I get letters from England every week.
Everybody in Pakistan.
I do. Stephen McFeely comes by, drops a big sack.
They listen to your podcast and then write a letter.
Of course they do.
This isn't Santa Claus.
terrible. I'm old, man. Fucking old.
Right over the quill pen on hemp paper.
All right, bring out the evidence.
Oh, the pigeons are back with another letter. So also up, speaking on old men, here's another great segue. Up.
Up was fantastic. My favorite Pixar movie. Absolutely great. Saw it in 3D too, but that was the kind of movie where it didn't matter. 3D made it cool, but it's a great movie regardless.
I don't even remember that it was 3D. Seriously, I went and saw it with the glasses and everything. I just know the movie. The first 20 minutes of Up is the best movie of the year.
Yeah, you
know
what I mean? It's great. And I remember...
How is it a kid's movie, though?
Well, you know, it's...
That's my only thing. Like, I love it, but I mean, like, the opening the 20 minutes is like...
I think it goes over a lot of kids' heads, but once the scout comes in, and like, because my daughter, you know, she's four, with the scout, the bird, and the old man in the forest, she was just laughing the whole time. That was the part.
How
that,
is
you know,
Wall-E
really
a kid's movie?
Wall-E.
40 minutes of silence. But literally... The theater just as quiet as the film and full of kids when I saw it. They're just enraptured by it.
The thing I love about Pixar too is all the idiots always predict, oh, this is going to be Pixar's first flop. And they've been saying that since Finding Nemo. They just showed, no, we make good movies and we're going to continue to do so.
That's the thing. They make fantastic movies. And not just
I heard
the
Toy
technology.
Story 3 is going to be fantastic. I actually know the guy who's cutting the trailer for Toy Story 3. He said the movie, because he gets to see him as he's cutting, he said it put him in tears. It's so good.
Good.
It's going to be really
good. The only thing I saw was, the only Pixar movie I ever kind of, was Bug's Life, where that kind of left me kind of, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't see Cars because I was told that it was
Cars
the worst of all of them.
Cars isn't the best one.
I didn't, I don't want to
even a mediocre Pixar movie
It's still entertaining and interesting. But,
so
we're getting close to running out of time, so let's quickly talk. Yeah, Mike, thanks.
Yeah.
Inglourious Basterds coming out on DVD. I know.
I have nothing to say about it. we're just about out of time. No, it's the best movie of the year for me. I'm the wrong guy to ask because, like I said, if Tarantino was here, it would be a podcast of me blowing him for 40 minutes. You'd just hear the horrible noises.
Would it really take that long?
I'd make sure it did.
Yeah.
That fucking guy would
Episode 4, guys. Tune in.
He'd be edging the entire time. I'd just be like, all right, I'm backing off. I don't care. It'd be worth it for me.
He'd be edging.
Yeah.
That's a great term. I liked
there
a lot
goes
of
our iTunes general audience rating.
There were some parts about Inglourious Basterds that I was like, come on, Quentin, don't put 70s graphics in there. But overall, it's still great.
He's talking about a prequel now.
Yeah.
It's a little disturbing. I don't know if I like that. Well, like
World
I said, you know.
I mean, Death Proof, I'm sorry, I did not like that.
No,
movie.
It wasn't very good.
I'm swallowing the Kool-Aid. I liked the whole Grindhouse experience. I loved it because I went at midnight and saw it at Mann's and saw, you know, Death Proof with Planet Terror together the trailers, and it was fantastic. But yeah, Death Proof, I mean, it's real talky. I mean, it's the first time I even went, wow, there's a lot of talking in this fucking movie. Because you know why?
Crazy stunt car driver.
Because it was almost like in his crazy coke-fueled frenzy, he went, hey, I can make anybody a fucking actor. Instead of bringing, you know, when he brings Travolta back or he brings Robert Forster back, these are guys who have the chops. And then he's re-exposing them to people. But when you start giving a stunt performer, you know what I mean, 100 lines in Death Proof, you know, you're going, gee, that Australian chick. Because she's, you know, she was basically Uma Thurman stand-in in Kill Bill, and he makes her the star of this movie. You're like, dude, now you're trying my patience. I mean, that's like him going, I can do anything.
Yeah.
But the first half of Death Proof with Kurt Russell is
great. It's great.
But
when the girls get in the car, I left.
Yes.
I was like, I'm done.
Yeah, after the accident.
I got in the car.
Yeah.
And I killed somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first half of Death Proof, but from the accident on. But Inglourious Basterds, I'm a huge fan. I love it.
Okay, well, let's wrap up with the dumping grounds of movies,
January, February.
And what do we got coming up? Daybreakers.
Daybreakers. Oh. Vampires Rule the Future.
That looks like the worst movie with the best actors in it I've seen in a long time. I don't get why all these great actors.
I'm
going to
see it.
Movies.
I'm going to see it and go, come on, and then remind myself it's January.
It's got a great one sheet, man. That poster is awesome. Yeah. That upside down vampire dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
Spy Next Door with Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan kids movie.
That's got the worst one sheet of all time. Yeah. Jackie Chan on strings.
Just hanging there. Yeah. I did see the trailer for this, and I realized, oh, I guess Vin Diesel was unavailable. It really is. It's the exact same story as like The Pacifier, where he's a secret agent, but he has to take care of kids. Oh, how's he gonna do both at the same time?
I don't know.
No,
but I know that I'll tell you the most perplexed I've been is Book of Eli. Because I'm like, if this was released any other time of the year, I'd go, this is going to be great. But I'm so like, why is it January. I agree.
Every time I see the trailer, I think that this must be their hidden blockbuster, like their 300 that comes out in February and makes $1 billion. Like maybe they're thinking big things. But
I'm
then,
sure somebody is thinking that.
Yeah, but I mean, come on,
it looks great. Gary Oldman's in it. I mean, it looks.
I also think they were trying to beat The Road. Trying to get it out as quickly because you know if you saw The Road and then you saw the trailer for Eli, you went,
well,
hey.
Yeah, there's The Road. Remember, there's The Road and then there's The Postman.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
I think this is going
to maybe
be
that's what happened.
The
maybe they were going to try to make a run and they heard about The Road and said, forget it. Let's just put it in January.
Yeah, because when I saw the trailer in the summer for Book of Eli, I even went, oh man, The Road's coming out. Yeah, because I knew. So the fact that they moved it back to January, I don't know. Denzel and a post-apocalyptic world. And
well, yeah. I mean, let's admit something here. We're all going to go see it.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Hughes Brothers will see it.
So they're going to get their money.
Yeah, we're going to see Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Or are you going to go see Legion? That's right. Angels are back to settle the score.
The thing I love about that Legion.
They've been angry
trailer.
For a long time.
Yeah. They're mad. Look what we've done. The thing I love about that trailer is you can tell the script is a mess just from the trailer.
Oh, it looks unbearable.
You watch the trailer and you go, what? I mean, if you can't cut together a cohesive trailer in, 30 seconds from this movie?
You know, honestly, what they should do, they should cut together a 20-minute mashup of Daybreakers and Legion. And just, that's there.
Oh, my
You've
God. Angels fighting vampires?
Boom.
I would see that.
Sold.
All trying to get at Eli as he carries the book across the desert.
We're going to make this movie. It's going to be comedy film nerd's first feature film.
Yeah. James Cameron, don't steal that idea.
The Legion of Book Daybreakers.
Boom, boom. Mike Schmidt. All right, so that's episode 3.
Full episode.
Full episode, guys. Week. Welcome. Tell your friends. Mike Schmidt, thank you very much for being on the show. Anything you want to promote, my friend?
Don't forget to go and check out the 40-Year-Old Boy podcast, available at mikeschmidtcomedy.com/podcast.asp, or just go to iTunes and look for the 40-Year-Old Boy, and that's the number 40, not the word. So go ahead and check it out. Follow me on twitter.com/the40-year-old boy. Go to facebook.com/the40-year-old boy. Be my friend. Do all of those fun things. And please support comedyfilmnerds.com because Jackie Cation, Alan Havey, Neil Weekly, all very fine writers. Matt Weinhold does a terrific job. So I'm fortunate enough to be asked to do things over there occasionally. And it's really great. It's going to be eventually. You'll be upset that you weren't one of the first wave of people to go ahead and get in a comedy film nerd. So make sure you go and buy everything and see everything and go see Graham live. And thanks for letting me do
that. Wow. Mike, thanks, we're doing Mike. Awesome plugs for everybody. Thanks.
The third Tuesday of every month at the Improv Lab on Melrose and Crescent Heights in Hollywood, we do our Comedy Film Nerds live show. Mike Schmidt has done two of them already. January, we will have Steve White. And we're also
working on Jonathan London. We'll do a cross promotional show with Geekscape.net. That'll be a lot of fun.
All right. So we are also Comedy Film Nerds are on Twitter and Facebook and MySpace as Chris Mancini is on all of those, and myself, Graham Elwood, is on all of those. Chris's book, Pacify Me.
And you can get that signed and personalized at comedyfilmnerds.com along with Graham's new CD
Boom!
That just came out.
New CD dropping, kids. The Comedian's Got a Boo-Boo. Available through Rooftop Records. Available on iTunes as well. Also through Comedy Film Nerds. I will personally autograph it if you buy it through comedyfilmnerds.com. And enter coupon code IMPROV through
until the end of the year.
December 31st, 10% off everything you buy.
Everything in the store. And we also have all of Stephanie Wilder Taylor's books signed and personalized as well.
We have Doug Benson's new CD, Unbalanced Load.
Yep.
And what else are we missing?
Palm Strike t-shirts.
Boom! Palm Strike it. All of our products. Check it out. Tell your friends about this podcast.
And new reviews and columns on the site as well. And along with, we should be getting the message boards up and running, and you can spend some time on the site.
Yep. New reviews up every week. This has been episode 3. Mike Schmidt, Chris Mancini, Graham Elwood, reminding you that Han shot first.